and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy. I'm joined by the regular rugby crew, that is Sam and Westy. We have, I think, probably one of the... This would have been the easiest podcast to maybe not do in recent memory. Just some backdrop, the URC was on this weekend. Don't know if anyone was paying attention. But yeah, we had tweets being like, lads, take the week off. But we're here. This is probably the biggest therapy session we may have had in a long, definitely in a couple of seasons. But before we get stuck into that depression session, which is actually a good name, I might title this episode Depression Session. How are you? How was your weekend?
I'm glad I didn't get to the game. I was trying thinking about bringing the daughter up to the game, but because it was after bedtime and cold, I was like, oh, I just don't know if she'd be up for that. And I'm quite glad I wasn't there to witness it. Although watching on TV might sometimes be a bit more difficult if it's going bad, because you don't feel like, I know you can't do anything in the crowd, but you don't feel like you're any help. You're sitting there helplessly, like at home watching it, watching every replay, listening to commentators talk about things. And poor Mac was making his punditry debut for RTE, and you had to ask him about the game afterwards, and it was depressing me just listening to the poor chap. So other than that, now Easter holidays, on a good weekend now. Got 2 weeks off. I'm doing a bit of work for my partner has a business. She runs a stage school, and they're doing a summer camp and an Easter camp. So I'm doing a bit of work this week for that. But the weekend, yeah, I don't know why I care so much about sports, but when things don't go wrong don't go right for the teams that I support, it does make the rest of the weekend harder. Thank God Connacht weren't on Friday night, or it would have been a tough weekend.
Yeah, it's a good point, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But by the way, great call not bringing your child, because it was freezing. The weather forecast wasn't even given like super cold, but the wind that was coming through was just cutting, especially the last like 20 minutes and how bad the game was. We didn't leave early. If I was ever going to leave early, that game was high on the contention list for to get the hell out of here. But we didn't. We stuck around. And actually, to be fair, some people left, but a good few people did stick around. But my weekend was, pretty good. Saturday didn't do a ton. We kind of just kind of chilled out, relaxed. And then Sunday, my fiance went to the airport. She's gone back to New York for 2 weeks. I'll be joining them Wednesday. So early call, there will not be a podcast next week because I'll be in New York. So there was a pretty chill weekend. Went to the game with Westy, so Westy will be joining us here in a few minutes, but went to the game with Westy, and the highlight was going to the front door afterwards to join Westy's future father-in-law, Liam, aka the Prof, and having two or three pints of Guinness with him, and his brother-in-law Derek actually showed up, who I didn't realise afterwards his brother-in-law, but that was great. Real good chats, good rugby chats. The Prof, huge Ben Healy fan, by the way. Shockingly. Yeah. Couldn't believe it. Yeah, massive Ben Healy fan. So me and him were having a good chat about that. So that was really fun, and that was good crack. Got a table, and then came home and was in bed by 11:30. So all good. We're gonna push the Connacht game till the end because we want to give Westy time to join and vent as well. So we'll start with Munster, who had an impressive win away to Ospreys, 27-17, 4-3 here. Out of all the teams who benefited this week, Munster were high on the list. I think they're up to fifth now in the table. I think pretty comfortably fifth as well. They got the result that they needed, Sam, and you have to give your hat. You have to take your hat off to them. Very, very impressive stuff, right?
Yeah, they were made to work for it. It was kind of a funny old game because they started like a house on fire. I think they scored within about 4 or 5 minutes. And they had some really good passionate play. They were made to work for it. It wasn't great. They got fortuitous enough. Sean O'Brien got a huge intercept and then a kind of a mad series of bounces. I don't know how the ball stayed in and then smacked them up and smacked off someone and they managed to score the try. So overall, a really good result for them, especially given the kind of the state of the league at the moment. Connacht should have capitalized on this weekend's results, but they'll be happy with it. I think the happiest of anyone watching that game, even more so the Munster fans, would be Leinster fans, because Ortiz Nyman was pulling strings. It was like watching that lad holding the tennis ball. All the offloads, he was kind of bringing a lot of what they'd hoped he would bring. So that was disappointing, to say the least, from my point of view. And then the Connacht result made it much worse. But I think Munster looked to do us a favour in terms of beating Ospreys and denying them any losing bonus point at the end. They were a Cuthbert pulling up with a hamstring 5 meters out from the line, away from getting two bonus points, because it scored three tries and would have ended, or they would have scored four tries and ended within 7 points of it. So it was potentially a great result for Connacht. Connacht didn't capitalize on it, but Munster will be happy out because they're cementing themselves into that kind of top eight for sure. It's so close between fourth and 11th or 12th. I can't remember exactly which one it is, but it's so close that I don't think anything is going to be decided in the next week or two. It'll after a good bit after Europe. It'll be the last few games. It'll all come down to the wire and who travels well and who comes back with a result, who scrapes something through. But Munster will look to just, if they get themselves firmly up into that kind of top four, they can afford a result or two in some of the tougher games coming. And I'd say they'll coast in and they'll probably end up finishing maybe not top four, but maybe sixth. They'll be happy out with that, considering, the criticism of some of their games this season. Such a monster thing to do is go through a season, people critical of how you played, looking at the long list of injuries, and then to go, well, we still finished sixth and probably end up in a semifinal last year, the equivalent of winning the league. That's the monsteriest monster thing that ever happened.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize to the Munster fans. They're actually fourth in the table. So they're on 39 points. Fifth to 11th is separated by 5 points. Connacht's at ninth in that league, on that table as well. But it's super tight. After 11th, then it does drop off to 23 points. But I mean, it's tight, but Munster will be delighted, as you said, that they're now 4 points clear of that fifth spot, so kind of a win clear, and that is huge. And they'll be, yeah, as when we said it before, like, Munster just want to get to that top, that quarterfinal stage onwards. Obviously, the higher up the table you are, and if you get a home quarterfinal, it's huge, but they won't care, and they'll be looking to get as much out of Orgy, as you said, for the next couple of weeks and months, so as they finish out the season with them. And yeah, it's just like, again, we love to poke fun here at Munster, but they just know how to get the job done, like, away from home. It would have been easy. As you said, Ospreys didn't play bad, and like, they could have coughed up a win there, or as you said, even like a losing bonus point to them, and they just don't do it. They regularly show up and get it done, and you have to tip your cap to that. It's super impressive. And now, with, as I said, we'll get to Connacht, but now, like, Connacht look like they might need to get some points out of that Munster game coming up now in a couple of weeks, and
I
that's not.
still don't think so personally. I think the match.
Yeah, well, yeah, look, I said we're it's not, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Hopefully we don't need to, but a win on Saturday would have changed that too. But yeah, impressive stuff from Munster. They'll be, Carberry played. How did you think Carberry got on?
I don't know. I'm trying to think that. Was I overly impressed by him? I can't remember now. I've not rewatched the game. Oftentimes I get a chance to rewatch the game, but I didn't get a chance to rewatch that game. So I don't think I was overly impressed by him. He was injured there for a little bit at one point as well. I'm trying to remember the game. So Friday, like the
Well, I was
context.
going to say, if you can't remember, he obviously didn't stand out too much.
No, he didn't stand out great. I don't think he was particularly bad. Like, I'm not trying to make out like I'd seen it and I haven't. I did watch it, but it's coming after the Connacht game at the weekend. It's hard to remember much positives otherwise, from a point of view. Yeah, so I don't particularly remember him. I don't think it wasn't the type of thing where you saw him and gone, oh, there's the Joey Carberry of old. I think they're gonna miss him going forward. I think he was standard enough.
Yeah, I think that's sort of his career now, which is a shame. But yeah, what trying to watch rugby highlights after watching Connacht on Saturday was just it was a no-go. Speaking of teams that are struggling right now, we'll move on to Ulster. And just as we started recording this, it was announced that JP Petrie, the CEO, will leave the club with immediate effect, mutual consent, which can mean one of two things: that Ulster have said you're going if you want to say mutual consent, we'll agree to that. And also, as you said, Sam, beforehand, it means he's probably getting a nice payoff. But before we even get into the game, what a mental couple of weeks for Ulster, Sam. Like, losing their head coach again with immediate effect, which is unheard of really in rugby. CEO then, what, a couple of weeks later, especially after when Dan McFarlane was let go. JP was quite boisterous and saying, like, that we can now kind of get back to winning ways, and, like, very much speaking like a man who was going to be there for at least another season or two, and whatever. A handful of weeks later, he's at the door now too. It's a total clear out for Ulster, which, again, we're getting to the result now. It's probably needed, Sam, right? It just, again, you can get into the nitty gritty of it, but sometimes change is good just for the sake of change, right? And it was so sour up there now that getting rid of both head coach and CEO probably is not a bad idea.
Yeah, was a couple of years ago, was the women not making it to the World Cup that Everyone started using this term root and branch review, and they were like, oh, we're gonna root and branch review, and there's gonna be this whole big thing. And I think that's probably what's happened slightly by the IRFU on Ulster. From the fans' point of view, talking to Ulster fans in the last number of years, they've all maintained that it's been at a bad in a bad state. But from the outside looking in, from Connacht fans, I've questioned it, and I didn't understand how they were in such a bad state, because I was looking at the team they had, I was looking at the recruitment they had, the stadium they had, the position they were in, which looked like they could be, fighting for honours. For the last few years, I kind of just didn't seem to want to believe them when they were telling me it was as dire as it is. And now it seems like it's kind of peaked and fallen over that peak a little bit earlier than would have presumed. I kind of thought maybe this team would age into that sort of that fallow period. But actually, it looks like it's just all come to a head this year because of a falling out between players and management. And it just seems like new voices were needed. And I think if the management goes there, the people who are in charge of the recruitment, the issues that exist, the financial issues that exist around the club also have to be in question. You can't just scapegoat Dan McFarland. So, Petri, it's been known from Ulster fans, and I've been made aware through conversations with Ulster fans that, he should have been a dead man walking, and now it looks like he has been. So, I think that this will just be a good new voice for them. But much like, Connacht under Wilkins and what should have been, Munster under Rountree, it might not happen instantaneously. And that's something that I think fans in general need to remember, that, if you do decide to uproot everything, get rid of CEOs and get rid of coaches, out, kill off a bit of dead wood in terms of like playing staff, you have to be willing to give it a year, more than a year, for that all to come into itself and to grow, naturally, and to start showing the results. And it's something that I think it's hard to do when you're in a position like we are, especially hard to do in a position like Ulster are, because of the some of the recruitment, some of the players they've had, some of the players that they've lost, they've been a higher caliber of player than Connacht have had. I don't think there's any admitting or there's any denying that. You've got World Cup winners going there. You've got big name signings. You've got bigger players moving from Leinster to going there than would come to Connacht traditionally. So I think it's gonna be hard for them to give it the time it deserves and needs. But someone like Murphy, being an under 20s coach coming into his first senior gig the way he is, I think that that's the right way to do it. And now looking for a CEO that's like-minded, someone that'll get him back on track. But by all accounts, it will be a penny-pinching exercise for a while. They're not just going to be bailed out. The whole of the provinces outside of Leinster are going to be under kind of strict enough financial regulations going forward. And we'll see some players, some mainstays leaving and moving. And it might be hard for them to get back to the heights of, I say heights, where they were 2 years ago when they were a legitimate contender for Leinster, and they were, they'd gotten a result in the RDS, and people thought that they could push on, they could make a go at Europe, and it didn't happen. I think it'll take a long time to get back to there, but I don't think it'll take very much effort from a new setup to get back to a fourth, fifth, sixth in the URC, and that's exactly where you want to be at the end of the season because of the playoff nature of the league.
Yeah, we've said a long time it's not the talent that's the problem at Ulster. It's kind of all the other forces. And like, when Kitsoff was announced, everyone was saying what a great signing it is. But then when you actually like dig a bit deeper, you're like, well, is that really a great signing? It's a lot of money for a prop, and how much of an effect can a prop have? And we'll get stuck into the game now. Obviously, they were down to South Africa. They were playing the Sharks. Sharks have had a really bad season. But at home, obviously, it can be a different animal, and they were this weekend. They beat Ulster 22-12. This was a properly physical game, even more so than the Connacht game, which I thought was also very physical. But Sharks really, really brought the physicality, and I think just eventually wore Ulster down. Ulster looked absolutely gassed towards the last 20 minutes, which is understandable when you're just taking hit after hit after hit and putting the body on the line, and the Sharks just kind of bet them to death. But I suppose there's two questions here. People might look at that result and say, God, Ulster lost the Sharks. Sharks been awful. Sharks were pretty good that game. I suppose the main question is, where has that Sharks been all season, Sam? I know they were missing some big names, but considering their results, that team looked a mile different to what we've seen before.
There were moments of good stuff, but there was also some absolutely horrendous decision making. Like the way that they were able to bully Ulster at parts, and the manner in which they got to where they got, you sh they sh a good team with the standard of player they had, and the advantage being the heat, the advantages of being the home team in South Africa, the advantage of where Ulster are right now mentally, they should have won about 40 points, but they didn't, because their decision making, their one-off running, a lot of some silly errors kind of kept Ulster in this game. But the Sharks team that's there on paper is ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's from what I've read from South African journalists, it's going to be quite hard to keep together. Some of those players might go. I think they went win now and actually just messed it up completely in terms of like recruited hugely in bringing players back from Europe to the Sharks, and also taking in some players from other areas in South Africa, especially the Currie Cup teams and stuff, and trying to kind of create this South African player-based dream team. So I've been looking at the squad all season going, what is going on there? And they've, weed the result there. So they must be in dire straits. But they managed to put it up to Ulster. They managed to abuse them. But I think if it wasn't for the leveler of the heat and the travel and the mental side of things for Ulster, I think the Sharks would be actually a little bit disappointed in their performance. Even though they did get the win that they really needed, they probably could have pushed on, but there was some god-awful errors, and it shows to you a little bit of why they are where they are this season, because a team in a better position than Ulster right now might have capitalized a bit more on it. And that being said, refereeing wise, decision wise, try scoring wise, I think legitimately it should have been 5, maybe 10 nil. Tries were just mental. The decision making, the refereeing was weird, like to say the least. And I think that both teams kind of got away with murder at points.
Think to fair, Whitehouse actually went into the old dressing room afterwards and said, "Congratulations, you've just been Whitehoused," and he just kind of walked out, dropped the mic on the stage. The Ulster try that was given particularly was incredible. Like that was TMO, that wasn't Whitehouse, but like the most obvious hand touch by an Ulster player to pop the ball out of a ruck, and like the TMO just again just. I'm probably the harshest on referees out of us three here, but like that just can't happen. I'm all for really hard marginal calls because that's okay to make a mistake. That's just really obvious. It's just that they just didn't look at that other angle,
They
or they
did
left
look
it
at it.
out.
They did.
Well,
The commentator was
I think
saying,
it popped up at the end, and he'd already given his decision, I
but
think.
no, they'd seen that earlier, and then they went to the side angle, and then they were like, "Oh no, I can't see anything." But the commentator said from the first one, he was like, "I see the Ulster hand there." Like the commentator was saying it, and then with what's happened with Austin Healey in the Premiership at the weekend, and the commentary like apparently being linked to the TMO, you're wondering how it got missed. Like the commentator was saying it over and over again.
And Stephen Ferris, or was it Cave? I can't think of who it
Can't
was.
remember.
I think it was Ferris. I don't like Cave. I like Ferris though. But he was saying it's like that's what, like even he couldn't believe that. That's terrible. That's not a try at all. And that's like they're the calls that drive me mental, because it's just like, oh, that's not even difficult. Like that's not hard to get. Like the Scotland France won the Six Nations. I saw the logic behind that. I thought it was ridiculous, but I can see why that wasn't given. That one is just like, come on.
The Sharks one was a bit all over the place as well, though.
So the knock on, explain to me, like that looked to me like obviously a knock on, but apparently did it touch the hand? It looked like to
Ref
me like
said
it
it
touched
didn't.
the
Ref
hand.
said it didn't touch the hand, and according to the laws, you can put down root pressure with like any part between your neck and your waist. So the ref is right if it didn't touch the hand. But every time I saw it, I swear to God, it touched the hand. Like it couldn't have looked more like it touched the hand.
Yeah, it just seems like, and this is nothing against the South African teams, it just seems to be the wild, wild west down there. Like, Sharks were definitely getting away with some of the physicality that they were doing. I don't know how legal it was, but look, if the ref's not pinging it, then fair enough. But we have been joined by Westy. He has joined us. He has graced us with his presence. Westy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I take that Wild Wild West comment offensively. So they're the Wild Wild South at best.
I apologize, I didn't even see that. Westy, we haven't even touched on Connacht yet. We wanted to save. There's no point in me and Sam suffering through half it and then you don't have to suffer through it. So we've saved it. We started Munster and Ulster.
When I knew I was going to be late, I was really hoping I would miss the Connacht chat. Anything to avoid reliving that experience.
No, we're all in this together, man. I'm actually going to title this episode Depression Session. I've already made a judgment call on that. So. Westy, any thoughts on the Ulster game? Obviously, we've kind of covered most of it. Obviously, the announcement, I don't know if you've seen it, Westy, but JP Petrie is leaving with immediate effect as
Wow.
CEO. Mutual consent. What do you think? What are you reading to that?
I don't know if that's mutual consent. Like that's from my very limited perspective of it, that's kind of fan consensus. I mean, there's been a big push. I think the people who are unhappy with Ulster Rugby have laid a lot at the feet of JP Petrie. So I'd say there's a lot of pressure, it can be a thankless job as well at times to kind of be the the CEO, the figurehead of these organizations. You know, you don't get credit when the team is winning because you're the coach, but then you get quite a lot of the flack when, I suppose, especially off pitch matters, but when organizational things don't go to hand or when teams are losing. I don't think, as regards the game as a whole, I don't think anybody should be too shocked or making too many drastic decisions off the back of an away loss in South Africa to Sharks, especially a Sharks team that had three or four World Cup winners starting. You know, Ebenezer, Mapimpi, like Anyoam, like these are, you know, these guys are not only South African internationals, but they're key South African internationals at that. And it's the first game under Richie Murphy, so that was never going to be an instant kind of turning around of the ship. It's a very, very difficult place to go on your first sessions with the team. I mean, I don't know how involved he was for the win against Dragons 2 weeks ago. Was he even, did he have any kind of input into the team at that stage? I don't think so, but please correct me if I'm wrong. A bizarre match. I came in as you guys were talking about the TMO decisions and the tries and such. I think it's kind of one of those, apart from maybe some of the tackling, it's one of the things where you definitely see decisions kind of balancing out on either side. Like one team gets a try that you think probably shouldn't be awarded, and then the next time you get to try that you probably shouldn't be awarded. And look, it balances out in the end, I think, for the most part, not always, not when it's Connacht, obviously. And yeah, so look, it was a vaguely promising start in that they were quite competitive for most of the game, but like this was always going to be the most difficult way to start. This. If you were thinking these two games would turn your season around for the positive, then like you're very, very optimistic.
You make a good point about the impact of players. Ox came on from the bench and literally lifted Tom O'Toole off the ground in a scrum. Like, Tom O'Toole was about 3 foot in the air. To quote the to quote the Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not quite sure about the legality of it all, but you know, who the hell cares? Who the hell cares? It'll be interesting to see now how Ulster handle the remainder of the season. They're currently sitting in seventh. They're 1 point ahead of us. 7 wins from 12, which for their normal standards is not great. But you know, I don't know. Will they free fall, or will they kind of hold strong, or even progress up the table? I'm not quite sure. We'll see. It's an interesting couple of weeks for them.
Yeah, and going on top of the couple of weeks, like you've the Billy Burns news was finally confirmed. He's going to Munster on what looks like a 1 year deal. All accounts, Ulster didn't even offer him a contract, so they seem quite set. Petrie was saying that they're going forward with Doak and Flannery as their two tens, and you know, there's talk of Murphy's son coming in. He plays out half the Irish under-20. He's very good, and his other son's a scrum half as well. So there's talk of them maybe following, but that's a very green, group of tens to have there if you are looking to be competitive. So, you know, there's that side of things, and then there's the is Dave Ewers going after a season? Kits off rumored is allowed leave. There was McCluskey was rumored was allowed look elsewhere, and then has been told no since. And then there's also Addison is fairly confirmed apparently to be going back to England. I don't think they'll be overly just annoyed with that, considering the he just looked crocked, to be honest, and he has been crocked since he's been there, which has been such a shame because he's such a quality player when he is. But the other day, that chase back, he didn't look like he could sprint, and it was early on in the game. Didn't look like he was holding in, he just didn't look like he could physically sprint, which is not a great place to be if you're a 15 on a team that's not Leinster. Everyone else's 15 has to work. You know, Leinster's 15 looks good. That's about the extent of the league.
Yeah, Addison is a shame. He just can't stay healthy, unfortunately, for him. Because I know he's beloved by Ulster fans, so it is a shame to see that. But interesting to keep track of Ulster. Okay, last team before we have to talk about the depression. Leinster were away to Zebre. Competitive first half, and then Leinster sort of opened up a little bit, but 31-7 in the end. Westy, we sort of watched this in a pub, but obviously not really fully paying attention to it. But yeah, Zebre again put up a good competitive start and scored a lovely try, and then Leinster, you know, the juggernaut sort of rolled on. But your thoughts on this game from a Leinster perspective?
From a Leinster perspective, I would think it's kind of job done and not a lot else. You know, you can't, I don't think you can take too much else from a bonus point win away in Italy. You know, obviously, this is a game they would be expecting to go and win well. I thought Zebre, again, maybe the scoreline is slightly unfair, as in kind of, I suppose it may be I mean, they get their try late enough, but or sorry, they get their try early on, and it kind of opens up a bit towards the end for Leinster, as it tends to do. But I suppose that's just the kind of, as we say, the sheer power of, you know, the kind of Leinster machine. You know, the caliber of bench really comes into play when you look at when each team starts to rotate. You know, Leinster started to make all their changes kind of around the 50th minute or kind of just after half time. So it's at that point that you really start to see the pressure mount on Zebre. It's good game time for the players. It's points gotten, right? Like they've nobody back from international duty like the rest of us. But they're, I don't like this term, but their second team, just for the sake of the first team, is the Ireland team. Have kind of done the job while everyone else has been away and kept the points ticking over in the league and got them into a strong position. So I'd say it's job done. And you know, okay, they won't have anybody back next week, but once they start preparing for Europe again, they start to integrate their players back in, and we expect to see kind of more. I mean, it's hard to not call it a dominant win when it's 31-7, but a more complete dominant performance to start to come back in when they get their heavy hitters back in. But yeah, I would think you would just say job done, move on, and they won't have a massive read into it, I don't think.
Yeah, that's sort of where Leinster are at the moment. Spirit enough fight from Zebre, Sam. One win from 12 obviously is not a look, but I think people will agree that they have improved over past seasons. What does the next couple of seasons look like for Zebre, do you think?
I thought they looked good. I think, like Westy said, I actually don't think Leinster were that great. I think they were very disjointed looking. You know, there was a lot of changes there, and they didn't look like they were going too well. They're not looking going too well is winning 31-7. Are not looking going too well is losing to 14 men. So it's going to be thrown back in my face, that comment. Like, you know, I would love to be in the position of saying that I was an underperformance, but still getting an away result in Zebre, because I think Connacht might struggle against Zebre in the next few weeks, because Zebre ask a lot of questions of teams. And they're the questions that Connacht seem to be not as great at answering right now. So that's something that we'll look at. But I thought Leinster were good. I thought there's some good players. Kind of another one off the conveyor belt was that Andrew Osborne, brother of Jamie Osborne, two of them playing together, and he got his try. Tell you who I'd look at now if I was Connacht, I'd be all over right now if the rumours of Farrell moving on, even if not, because we don't really have any other 13s, is that Liam Turner, who is just an absolute pace merchant at 13. He's a natural 13. I like Hawkshaw a lot, but I don't think he's a natural 13. So I'd be onto him, but he's been impressive enough in a lot of these, like Westy said, you know, you don't want to use the term, but seconds kind of outfits. He's been good enough for them a lot of times this year. And I think the last end of last year, I started to get see the pace on him that they'll be, you know, they won't want to be letting him go too easy. But no, Zebre, I think have a good bright future ahead of them, but it might be a good bright future in the manner that the last 10 years have been a good bright future for Italy, where they've been competitive in games and still not gotten the results. And they might end up, you know, jumping around the bottom four as opposed to the bottom spot, you know, and that might be the extent of what they can really look to do for the next while. But Italian rugby on a whole is on the up, Benetton are on the up, and that can only benefit the Zebre team. I think that they recruit quite smartly. I know there's a few players there in the last year or two that have signed for them. I've gone, oh, look, that's an interesting signing. That's a good signing. And I think that they've been this year very good to watch, look to be able to score tries, just can't stop them being scored against them. And that's where the issues probably lie for them. It's probably where the issues lie for any of those up-and-coming teams. Connacht in the past as well have also had an ability to score tries, but also being quite porous in defence. And I think that getting better on the ball is the easier side of things. Some coaches try and get you better defensively and then try and work on the attack. And some coaches go, we need bums on seats. Good attacking, flowing rugby. We'll get bums on seats regardless of the results. Like, we want to be more enjoyable to watch if we're not going to get the results regardless. So I think that that's what they've done. And I do enjoy watching them. I think that they've been more competitive this year, and they will progress to be more competitive in the coming years, but so will a lot of teams in the league. The South Africans are really taking hold at the moment. The Welsh teams won't be as bad as they have been for long, I don't think. And the Scottish teams are always going to be strong, especially having those derbies against, like, you know, Glasgow get to play Zebre twice every year. That's a benefit to them. You know, we have to play Leinster twice every year. That's a downfall for us. So the league is disjointed in that manner, and it will affect Zebre. They might not ever get the results that reflect actually the improvement they've gotten, but you can see improvement there. And I hope that they just get to a competitive point where, you know, you're not putting out seconds teams every time against them, or we're not anyway.
Yeah, exactly. No, good point. Okay, let's move on. Let's just get it out of the way. Let's rip the band-aid off here, guys.
I'm off. Connacht... See you later.
Yeah, hey, it's been good, guys. Touch you later next week. Connacht 14, Emirates Lions 38. In the sports ground on a Saturday evening, we were all, me and Westy were so full of hope, and it was just taken away from us. Yeah, let's get stuck into this. There's probably plenty of ways of attacking this performance. In my view, this was a blend of bad personal performances with a really bad game management or a game plan for your opposition. I think it was clear from a lot of our selection as well that we in my mind, I was like, okay, we're going to try and, you know, play around the Lions here. We're not going to try and obviously play them at their own game here, which is physicality. And we did the opposite. We tried to out-muscle them, we tried to bully them, and we're just not that team. You know, Sam, me and you have spoken about David Hawkshaw. I like David Hawkshaw. I think he's a really good player. If you're trying to play the Lions physically and trying to front up with them, David Hawkshaw is just not big enough, unfortunately. Kyle Ford has got the size, but he's 22, 23 years old. It's not like he's going to, you know, have the experience. And it was just really disappointing. It was a game where we never really got going in it, and then when we did have the two tries, we almost immediately followed it up with, you know, something stupid. Like, you know, we scored that second try, Westy, I think, second half, and, you know, we were only then, I think, 5 points back, and there was some hope, and then we immediately knock on the restart, which obviously has been a problem for a long time now. But it's just small moments like that where the Lions could sink their teeth in, no pun intended, but just to take away all momentum. And God, it was just frustrating to watch. It was one of the worst evenings in sports ground since I've been going, which is only a couple of years. But there was a real like lack of hope from the crowd. There was just nothing that got people going. And let's start with management. Westy, we spoke about this too, but the game plan was incorrect. I think that's fair to say. Talk to us a bit about your thoughts on the game plan. Why did we try and out-muscle Lions? Why did we not try and be a bit more cute and clever, I suppose, is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah. I'll caveat this first before I say it by saying, first off, I don't know what the game plan was. Like, I don't have any access to any information nobody else has. And I also
think... You're on the squad, Westy. Come on, tell us.
And I also think that the Lions performed outstandingly. Like, they were actually very, very good value to watch. It, you know, when they had the ball, it was very, very exciting, very, very interesting. I think, like, one of the key... I'm not a big stats person. I try not to go on about stats too much, but like of the Irish provinces, we had the lowest number of kicks this weekend. We would have been historically a team that kicked a fair bit. Now, I'm not saying that it always yielded mass results for us, but like, so it's in very, very basic game plan terms. They're a big team. They're a big lumbering forwards. They're going to try and barrel us. Surely part of our game plan should have been to pin the ball in behind them, to pin players back and create space that way. It's, you know, the two ways for guys like me who aren't master tacticians to build space are, one, carry two or three times into the center, draw in players, whip it out wide and get around them. The other one is carry a couple of times, kick over the top when their players have come forward and attack the space that way. We didn't really seem to be doing either of those things. I mean, there was a great... was just after half time, we went, Steve, you'll know the numbers here, we went like 15 phases, we went 10 meters, it took us 10 minutes. It was just like, maybe because they got a red card that we thought we'd find space, like space would appear. Maybe that changed the game plan in the minds of the lads on the pitch, but it didn't seem like we were looking for that space. So we were looking to kind of outfox them, I suppose, rather than outmuscle them. And I would even like, and again, hindsight's 2020, right? When I saw the team picked, I was excited. I was like, oh, that's a really kind of dynamic Connacht team. That'd be really exciting to watch. But looking back on it, you know, we definitely could have done with more Brawn in the centre. If, again, I don't know if Tom Farrell was available, but somebody like Tom Farrell to get those go. Now, again, Kyle Ford actually had some really strong go-forward carries. It's not that these things weren't present at all. It's just that I don't think the game plan, the players were there to implement a game plan. I also think, if we had started someone like Jack Carty, we are going to be probing kicks past them a little bit more often. And again, okay, they're not always going to come off, but at least we'd be putting them under different forms of pressure. Whereas I just thought we kind of, at times we played into their hand. We ran directly at them. We actually rooked relatively well. We had a few good turnovers on our side, but It was when we had long sustained periods of possession. We just didn't seem to know what to do. We spent very little time in their 22. Now, they spent very little time in our 22, but they managed to run the pitch four times and score. So I don't want to get too much into the, like, you know, the defensive for the last. I said to you, like, after they scored the fourth try, I was like, I'd chalk everything else off because, you know, I think, unfortunately, and I'm not saying this is okay, but we kind of gave up at a point there, which I don't think is acceptable, but, you know, that's the way it was on the day. But yeah, I just think if our game plan was to hammer up hard, which it might have been, we went with a 6-2 split, we didn't really have the personnel. Again, I really like David Hawkshaw. I think he's a great player, but not the most aggressive ball carrier on the pitch. Should we have layered our team to go for that, or should we have been going for a more dynamic attacking game where we were trying to get over the top of them and run? Now, the problem is, of course, they're extremely fit as well. We saw them run the pitch three or four times. So I'm not saying that it's simply a case of kicking deep to them and letting them run at us, because, you know, that caused problems towards the end of the game as well. But it just didn't seem to me, from the game that we played, at no point did it seem like we had a comfortable running attack. And that's something I've been saying for the last few weeks. I don't think, like, our attacking stats are woeful. Like, we're in the bottom half of the league for almost everything. And I think, as we said at the game, like, this result was kind of coming for a while. Like, we had two very shaky performances against the Welsh regions, but we managed to get the win. This was a very shaky performance where the opposition were a lot better and they were really able to capitalize on our mistakes. So I don't know exactly what the sole cause is or what the sole thing we have to change for next week is, but yeah, it's even more worrying because although it's an outlier in terms of results, it doesn't feel like an outlier in terms of performance. I think that's kind of what's brought us all down to reality the last couple of days.
Yeah, that's really well put towards the end there. Yeah, I think what summarized the game for me was, you know, as you said, it's definitely not okay that Connacht pretty much quit the last try, because Lions were busting their balls to get back with basically the clock in the red, a man down, with massive gaps all over the pitch and broken play, and stopping the likes of Andrew Smith, I think it was Ralston, I don't know who was on a fast break, and like that summed up the game as well as pretty much. There was, I remember, it's not against Jack, but like it was like the game was over and then he kicks it off and it doesn't even go 10 meters. It was just kind of like, oh, like that's just the day it's been. Like it was really, really bad. And like that, Sam, everything that Wes just said there, and he mentioned it there, Lions get a red card 10 minutes into the game. We go 14 up, and I think we're all in the crowd there saying like, oh, this, you know, we haven't started great, but this could be the advantage we need. But Connacht just don't manage yellow cards or red cards very well, and it's been a recurring problem now for a couple of years. Why do you think that is? Why don't Connacht ever like capitalize the way the likes that Munster and Leinster do?
The decision making was absolutely horrendous. You saw that even with those breaks you mentioned. Like the decision making for those breaks was terrible. They should have all equal tries at the end. They would have been consolation tries, but they would have been tries. But the decision making, there was no pass. The follow up was too close. It was poor across the board. And we've seen that a number of times over the last couple of years. Connacht not being able to capitalize against 14 men. I will kind of slightly argue with what the two of you said about beating them up, because I thought we tried too hard to beat them up straight from the back of rucks, which was never a game we were going to get. When we got into the 22, we had a couple of chances where we picked and went, and we were getting nothing from it. And we had no aggression, we had no go forward because of the sheer size and ferocity of them. But what we did in the backs, I thought, was really frustrating, where we did that pullback, try to get around them thing far too much. And I think that was because they were playing against 14 men, but they didn't earn the right to get around them. And then they were just tackled in the backfield by an aggressive, smart defense that just defended well, and they didn't have to do too much. There was the pullback thing and the little flat pass onto an on-running back row, which we do, and it's almost telegraphed now because we do it far, far too much. I don't think that was the right decision. I think that that's decision making there. I think that that's maybe a lack of game awareness and a lack of game planning that you know, you probably have to put that at the feet of the coaches, but also the coaches could ask questions of players and say, we've planned for this, and your heads have gone, and you've tried to take advantage of the 14 men. Where I'll criticize them the most in terms of what Wesley said with the kicking, not the second half, because you were kicking into a wind, and I understand not kicking that. And you're playing against 14 men, and then suddenly that 14 men becomes 15 because they're defending with the wind. So the wind is an extra defender there, but not booting the ball all over the pitch in the first half when you're playing for three quarters or half at least of the first half against 14 men with the biggest wind. Any of the kicks we made were huge, not putting it up in the air. Contestable ones, tough ones to come back to. One's bombing them down on the fullbacks, putting them in the corners, moving them around the pitch, tiring them out so that you can then play against them in the second half. You know, they don't have to, it doesn't have to result in scores, although I would have liked scores, but we allowed them so much time to recover in the first half by stupid mistakes, really, really silly penalties, one-off runners getting isolated, handling errors, decision-making that was poor, and it just allowed a big hefty pack that had travelled halfway across the world that were, you know, they're looking at a four-week kind of run in Europe and going like, we have to get through this one on a cold, miserable night playing into the wind in the first half, and we allowed them an easy ride in the first half when they were up to, when they were at 14 men. We were soft in defence, which isn't something I think we've been this year. I think we've actually been quite good defensively this year outside of like, we've not scored tries, but we've been tough to break down. And I didn't think we were at the weekend at all. I thought we were very soft kind of in there. And I look back at it now, and this is completely hindsight because I was excited by the team when it was announced. But why is Tom Daly not playing? Like, I think that Tom Daly brings something to a team. And it could have been for Ford. I actually like Hawkshaw at 13 more than you do. I know that. But you have someone like Daly there. He's just a bit more senior as well. I'm going to mail one here for you. Rumblings of Munster looking at Daly as potential cover if Frisch goes, which is worrying because I think he'd do wonders for him, and he's not managed to get a minute for us in the last year or so. So it's bemusing. But Connacht's decision making, I think we lose ahead against 14, and I don't know who you put that down to. Do you put that down to the lack of leadership on the pitch? Maybe. Like I think Blade had probably one of his poorest games, and that's no slight on Blade. I really like Blade. I think he's a phenomenal player, and he's been close to the Ireland team for us, and I think he's been good enough to be in the Ireland team for off the back of some of his kind of performances over the last couple of years. But at the weekend, he wasn't. And then they looked like there was mouthing going on between him and coach and staff, but then still Colm Riley doesn't get on until the 65th, 66th minute. And you know, he's just back from injury. Don't know why Michael McDonald wasn't involved at the weekend, but he's been looking okay recently as well. And then you look at the idea that Marmion's gone to Bristol and he can't get a game there. And there's a lot of questions, and these are emotionally fueled by the weekend. I'm far more positive usually than this, and I want to remain positive, and I do want to reiterate now that I do have complete faith in this management team. And I said at the start of the season it could take a year and we would have to get with that, and I said that people would turn on the management if it did go wrong after a little bit. At the end of the day, we still have a winning record right now. Europe is still in our hands, and it's not as drastic as people say. It's not 25 points from a possible 30. It's 15 or so points, I think, from the next couple of games, which is there. The ability is there. So it is a shocking game, one that kind of have in them. We saw Edinburgh a couple of years ago. We saw the Bordeaux game earlier in the season. I think the most depressing part of it was that it was at home after two shaky performances, but it could have been a statement for us to get that result and to really solidify the top eight, and we didn't do it, especially given the other results of the weekend. So that's why I'm not as rosy and kind of upbeat as I usually am. I find it hard to take anything really from the game. I thought that there was players that usually don't have poor games, did have poor games. I thought we were soft in defence. But I still think we're in a position where we're okay. I think we can get a good result. Max said it on the comms afterwards. He said, you know, hopefully this is the kick up the ass we needed. But he was very honest in saying that we played into the Lions' hands. We played one-up runners and it didn't work. We got isolated and we gave them too much time off in the first half. Not using the wind against 14 men is criminal. And that's something that a leadership or someone has to take onus of that or take hold of that. And we have to look at, you know, what the story is. If Carty's going to be club captain and he's not playing, is Blade the right man? I believe he is. I think he's been good this season. But maybe Joyce is the right man, where someone has to do something. And then, you know, JB is knocking around. He's not even in the squad. And he's a calm head with experience. And I think that, even though, like we said, Peter Mahoney last week, he doesn't bring statistically better than any of the other back rows. You know, Hurley Langton, Oliver O'Brien, I thought would pick that as a starting back row. But I think JB brings something intangible to the team that you're missing out on. I worry we're going to lose him as well because we're signing up other players, and you know, he's probably a high earner.
Yeah, you said a lot of good things there. I think the policy it seems to be in the club of, if someone might be leaving, so the likes of Tom Day or Tom Farrell, they just don't play anymore. And that pisses me off because, again, we're not the type of team that can do that. We can't just be like, oh, we don't need Tom Farrell's services for the rest of the season. We do. He's a brilliant player when he's playing. The lack of leadership thing, definitely. I heard on Twitter as well that Blade was mouthing at Mark Sexton. I know Mark Sexton isn't here very long, but it's just not a good look when players and managers are shouting back and forth at each other. I don't know. I didn't see it myself, so I can't really comment, but it doesn't scream a happy house. It also, like, I would lay more of the blame there on Blade. Like, you know, you just don't shout back at your coach regardless. He may not respect Mark Sexton yet or whatever. I don't know. And
but not in public. Mark's, just do whatever you want to do. It's the same with Dan McFarlane calling out the Ulster players. There's a time and place. Yeah.
And Mark, by all accounts, Mark Sexton is quite a tough, tough coach, and he does demand a lot. But maybe that's the feckin' kick up the ass that is needed. Maybe Mark Sexton is just that kind of coach that we need. That maybe there is a few lads in Connacht that need a bit of a, you know, a bit of an eating, and they're not good enough. And again, we are. The only thing that stopped me from really being super depressed is that the last two bad performances have come after like 2 weeks off from Six Nations. So like the lack of cohesiveness can be potentially put down to that. But the thing that, and me and Wesley talked about today, and Sam, you mentioned it as well, that really annoys me about Connacht, and because I can see it happening next season as well, is that there's always so much turnover. And like last year was a coaching staff, so like that, and that might explain what's going on now. You might lose 6-7 players this year, some experience, some not, but that's again more turnover and more like lack of cohesiveness there, and that pisses me off because it's always an excuse that's built in, which I don't like, and it's just not letting us potentially see that full potential of the team. And like this team played, Wes, you summarized better. We're like, you know, we good results this year, but the performance has been pretty poor at times. Whereas last year there were some great performances, some shitty ones too. Don't get me wrong, but there was some. The wins were really good performances, and that's what like going into that quarterfinal Ulster gave us. Like, oh, we can beat this team. At the moment, I wouldn't fancy beating any team in that top eight. Like, just and again, this is all reactionary to Saturday, but that's how bad it was. And there was a real lack of fight and the lack of leadership. Like, why is there such a lack of leadership? Like, and it's obviously it can't be Bundy, obviously, because he's not there enough. Blade plays a lot and should be that lead, but maybe he's just not that type. As a Joe Joyce, it's his first season. It's tough to just give him the captain's armband straight away.
Captain Bristol a lot.
But at the same time, he's only in a couple of months. Like, I'm not saying like I'm against it, but I'm just saying I can see maybe why he isn't there yet. Maybe he has to build up more of a rapport.
No, but you don't need an armband. Like, I'm not saying that he should or he shouldn't. Like, I'm saying the lack of leadership. I don't put that down to the person who's named as captain on the team sheet. It has looked. You spoke about it last year and I defended it, and it's speaking about it this year. It looks like there isn't an on-field scruff of the neck, John Muldoon, Paul O'Connell, let's get going. You know, even if they're not the captain on the thing, you need a leader. And I do think that often that is the forward, you know, because the grunt work, the winning of games is done in the forwards, but we don't seem to have that. And it hasn't existed for a while. I think that personally, I think Oliver is that type of player, and Paul Boyle has been that type of player for us. He's been a captain before. Daly has been a captain and has then not played for 2 years after. Like, it's mad, you know, to think. But there are players like JB, I think, that exist that do stuff that it's intangible, but it's captain material and it's leadership material. And the weekend, that wasn't there. And often we haven't had it. And I don't know where you get it from. Do you recruit it or do you build it? But it needs to happen.
And maybe that's what Mark Sexton was trying to do. Maybe he was trying to give that scruff of the neck thing and shouting at Blade, and the reaction wasn't good. And that's what I was saying last year as well. Is I don't think when things go bad, lads just duck their heads. And I just again, like, that just doesn't happen for Munster. It just doesn't happen for Leinster. It just doesn't. It's just not in the DNA. Whereas Connacht, it happens too often. It doesn't happen all the time. That's I think the second biggest loss of the season in the URC after the Bulls, wasn't it? Bulls, that was in South Africa. As you said, Sam, the worst part was it's at home, where we've been very good for 2 years, the two seasons of being a fortress, and that happening it's just not good. Especially when, as we already said, there was such an opportunity there, like even a 4-point win there, and you're sitting sixth. You're sitting fifth, and just looks a lot more rosier. But Westy, how does that result impact the rest of the season? There's six games to go, three of which include away to Munster, home to the Stormers, and away to Leinster, the last three games of the season. Sam, I think Sam's correct. We don't need as much points as we did fear, but just the general mood around the camp and performances, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I think from this perspective now, it just means we're chasing the season. We talked a lot at the start of the season when we were in the top three because we won our first three games, about the pressure that alleviates because you're putting yourself in a good position. You're not chasing results. You're not watching other results. And obviously we jinxed it because now we've fallen back down to ninth, I think we're in now. So yeah, I kind of agree with what Sam. One of the things, you know, I talk about players kind of shutting off a little bit towards the end. And the real thing that frustrates me about that was because, look, even if we'd taken a point from that game, you know, that point would have been pretty valuable, I think. You know, I think this game could well even come down to something like points difference this league, because that's how tight the middle of the table still is. I think it puts an enormous amount of pressure on us now to go to Benetton and get a result. That would have been no mean feat, regardless. You know, it's not the same as it was years ago. It's not a game that you want to be targeting to get your season back on track. If we go to Benetton and take nothing from it, then we're staring down the season. You know, okay, we've got is it Zebre at home and Dragons away. Those are two games again. You can assume that we're going to win, but a lot of people assumed we were going to win this game, and that's, you know, maybe down to people like myself, maybe not watching the Lions close enough, not identifying exactly how they could hurt us. But it's also part of it was down to how well we were playing at home and how we were able to eke out these victories. And I thought it would go our way, to be honest. But it's as you said, like you said it half jokingly about Zebre losing to Leinster and then coming back and beating us. But you know, Zebre have accumulated more points this season than they have in any other season in the league. So it is a clear indicator that they are playing better rugby than they were. Dragons, by the time we play them, will have all of their Welsh internationals back in and all up and running at that stage by all accounts. And then we run the gauntlet for the last three games: Munster, Stormers, Leinster. I mean, the sto like you're very much looking at possibly, even if it is only 15 points that you need, you're looking at needing to get something, you know, a win or a draw out of those three games to get you over the line. And as I said, with our points difference being so bad, you know, that is a worry as well. It's not like if we end up in a I don't know, is it done on head-to-head basis or points difference basis or how they break these tie breaks if there is one, but it starts those conversations, right? We have six games left, and we need to take points from them. And you know, as I say, the last three aren't games you want to need to take points from. This game in Treviso was always going to be really, really difficult. So hopefully it's the kick up the arse that we need. Hopefully we see that directly translates on the pitch to the Benetton game, because again, they're 1 point behind us or 2 points behind us. This again is another what they call a 6 point swing in the Premiership. Like if we keep them behind us and push ourselves forward, I mean that's what we need to do. So look, there is a long way to go. Teams have to go to South Africa, all the stuff that we've been saying for months. But I think the long-winded point I'm trying to make is it takes our season out of our hands a little bit now. You know, we have to get results that you wouldn't normally bank on, and we need results to go our way, and that's just never a comfortable position to be in.
Yeah, that's a good point actually. Yeah, we're chasing, which we tend to be anyway. But yeah, God, being top of the table seems like forever ago, doesn't it? That seems like a lifetime ago. Yeah, look, it will always remain, as you said, a lot of arses being kicked, I think, this week in training. You hope so anyway. We hope that this therapy session has helped, because it's helped me a little bit, I think, getting it all out. We will actually we won't be having a podcast next week because I'm away, but that'll probably be when Connacht win and we don't have to actually talk about it. It'll be always when we lose, but we'll be back the following week to recap both URC weeks. Yeah, look, at it said it could be a lot worse. We could be down a lot further on the table. There's still a lot to play for, a lot to fight for, which is always nice come this time of season.
You just want to put things in context. Like, I know I've spoken this before. It's 15 points to get to 48. 48 was enough for Europe last year. Benetton 3 weeks ago were having the best season of all time, and they were up in second. They're below us now. I looked it up there, Wesley. It's your matches won before your points difference. So if we have seven right now, and Emirates Lions have six, if we were level on points, we'd be ahead of them technically. You know, but we're 1 point behind them. So that's kind of the way it's going to go. And then after that, it is your points difference. So points difference could come into it. I don't. If you lose out on points difference, you lose out on points difference. That's that. But I think you
Yeah,
look at the context of where Benetton are now compared to where they were 3 weeks ago, and look at the reverse opportunity that could be there. We could win away in Benetton, feel good factor. get a result in POW and then beat the Zebres and Dragons games, and then just maybe need a point or two from one of the last three instead of a win, and it could be all rosy.
Yeah, the only reason I bring up the points difference thing is like just because that's what you're still fighting for in the last 5 minutes of that game. That's why you're chasing back to keep them out. That's what we should be kind of aware of.
That's, that's what Lions were doing. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right, we will leave it there, lads. Good depression session. It's good to get it out. We will see everybody in 2 weeks. Appreciate it. And boys, always appreciate you coming on. Chat you then.
Night, night.